Hey, Muskegon. I'm sitting in a different position than I normally do when I do this show. One, I got tired of looking at a computer screen and not Paul's very handsome face, so I had to move to be able to see him. But I'm very honored tonight to have my former chief assistant. I have to say that now because he's since retired.
Yeah.
Former chief assistant Tim Mott agreed. The one thing that I didn't have very many stipulations when he left. One of them was that you had to come on and do the radio show. Now, I had suggested the Tuesday prior to his Wednesday swearing out ceremony, which rightfully was probably not the good time to do it. But since he's been on hiatus now, enjoying what I would call the good life, he actually reminded me more than once. And I said, well, then tonight's the night. And thank you, graciously, Paul allowed my request. Typically he does. It's my show, I guess. I get to do it.
Anybody,
I want.
Anybody.
But Tim,
well, it's my honor. You know, this has been a big part of what we do for a long time. I've always been grateful that you were willing to come and be very public and transparent. In fact, we had talked about coming on before, but I was always worried I'd say something that would get you in trouble.
Well, you probably still could.
Well, I could, but you can't do anything about it anymore.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
No, so I just think that the Beat has been such a big part of our community and our being transparent and connected to our community. And so the fact that you have a chance to do this every week is something that our office benefits from, our community benefits from. And I always love listening. And to be a part of here is a great honor, frankly.
Well, listen, I mean, it is, you know, oftentimes we'll reminisce about, and I still remember that very first time I came on air when I was running for office, and both you, Paul, and Big Rob, and I can't remember if there was a third person, if Covington was part of that.
It might have been, yeah.
When I was being grilled as a candidate.
Oh,
as typically these guys do around election time, which I really appreciate, remembering that this was always sort of a passion of mine to be able to do radio, and especially at this level. I mean, the touch that the Beat has in the community is just is really incredible.
Amen. It's been what, 14 years now?
Almost 14 years.
Yeah, and you still love it.
What's that?
You still love it.
Oh, man, I love coming. This is one of my favorite things to do. I mean, I often think of it and equate it to being on vacation. I mean, really. I mean, I think that, you know, through the years, we certainly try to keep talk about what's relevant, you know, and certainly talk about the criminal justice system and the various aspects of it. And you know, Big Rob always does his research. In fact, I suggested he get himself a Black's Law Dictionary, which he actually did. He owns his own Black's Law Dictionary.
Love it.
So he can look up terms because he couldn't quite wrap his head around how common everyday use terms are different
in the law.
Yeah. And so that he finally figured that one out. But yeah, I mean, it's great to have you on the show. In fact, you know, we might have to make you almost a not a regular occurrence, but every once in a while.
Yeah, see how you feel about it at the end.
Because you're going to be city council person in Roosevelt Park.
Right? Well, that's that is definitely not a thing. So I will say this. Somebody approached me and asked me if I would consider, there was apparently a vacancy in the Roosevelt City Park council, and I agreed to submit my name, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be on the city council. I'm not running for anything.
You're not running?
If I can help, I'm happy to help. If I can support the folks down at City Hall, I'm happy to do that. But I don't have any agenda. I don't have any campaign. I don't even have a campaign manager. I just agreed to put my name on the ballot. If they can use my service, I'm happy to be of service, but I'm not running a campaign.
So, no debates?
No. Well, nobody's invited me to a debate, but I'll show up if somebody wants to debate something.
No, it was, I think we talked about this shortly after I found out that was actually a reality. I had to check myself to make sure I wasn't dreaming, because I know through the years, you know, Tim and I have spent a lot of time together, and certainly we've spent three campaigns together.
Right. Yeah.
And so when I learned that he was actually putting his name on the ballot, I did the first thing that I could, which was offer to go door to door. That's the least I could do.
Right.
You know, and maybe secretly I will, because you know, why not? On my way home, just kind of run through a Roosevelt Park neighborhood. It's not very big. It'd take me about 10, 15 minutes to hit a couple of doors.
Right.
I suspect that there's probably an internal campaign going on amongst the individuals that asked him to run. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
So he don't have to show up.
Yeah.
Be like Mike Rogers. He's in Florida right now campaigning up here.
Yeah, of course. Baby. I mean, why not?
Well, I'll be in the neighborhood, but I won't be going door to door, and I won't be doing the traditional campaign stuff. Like I said, I this is a nonpartisan election. It's one of those things where if I can be of service and help, I'm happy to be. Mm-hmm. But I don't have any particular agenda, and I don't have a particular campaign that I'm looking to pursue. We'll see what happens in November.
Wow. So you've been in Roosevelt Park this whole time?
Yeah, well, we've lived there for probably about 14 years now, maybe 16 years, I guess. I lived in Glenside, just across a couple streets down before that. So been in Muskegon for 28 years.
Wow.
29 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's good. That's good. You're going to win, Tim. Your name. It's right. Not going to put out any campaign signs, but he's going to win.
No.
No yard signs. But DJ got a long list of questions here.
Now, in the spirit of transparency here, Paul, as you know, we don't do any pre-production meeting for my show. We really don't even come up with an agenda. It's basically I walk in and we just roll with it. Because typically you and Big Rob are loaded with questions and they're always good. Well, today I get an email from my good friend and he said, hey, take a look at this for the show tonight. And so this was prepared not by me.
Oh, okay.
This is prepared by my guests.
Oh,
well, right. And to be transparent, I thought rather than talk about me or those kinds of things, I thought it would be useful if the beat was in a position to receive exclusive news today. So I spent a little time this weekend and like to present some information that will only be revealed on the beat.
All righty. We ready for it. It don't have anything to do with Michigan.
No,
we argued that at the end of your last segment, you know, and we're going to let, I mean, it, you know, Western Michigan filed an appeal today. I mean, that's cute and it's ceremony, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere, unfortunately. But yeah, we'll see.
Wow. All right, DJ, I'll follow your lead.
Well, listen, I mean, so I think it. These questions, actually, looking over them, actually do reveal a lot about Tim, even though he doesn't want to talk about himself, and I can appreciate that. But let's just, so people understand historically, and not a lot of people know this about Mr. Mott, but prior to him coming to the prosecutor's office, he was a defense lawyer.
Yep.
Down in Holland, in the Holland area. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So when I first came out of law school, I actually joined a law firm in Allegan, and we did a lot of our work in Allegan and in Holland. And I absolutely loved it. We did public defense work. We did retained client work. There was three of us in that law firm, and I eventually became a partner. But around year five, after I had left law school, I really felt a calling that I wanted to do more than what I was. I wanted to be involved in more cases that were more important or in terms of the impact on our community. And I wasn't really looking, but somebody had mentioned that there was a position opening up in the Muskegon County Prosecutor's Office. And I was really happy where I was. I just made partner there. But I started paying attention better what was happening in Muskegon County. And thought, you know what? I think I'll just put in a resume to see how it goes. And then when I came up here and really got a chance to know what Muskegon was about and what the prosecutor's office was about, I was convinced. I had, at that time in my life, decided that my passion and my calling was really, I think, to represent victims. And I saw great value in representing people who had been accused. And I was so grateful to be their lawyer and to make sure that their rights were protected. And I still think that the role of a defense lawyer is extraordinarily noble. I think that their responsibility to make sure that the laws are followed and the Constitution is protected is incredibly valuable. But I also think the other side of this, too, in terms of making sure that the victims are represented well, is something that I think is valuable in our system, too. And so I didn't apply to any place else, but I ended up applying here in Muskegon County. It was offered a position, and I really thought about it hard, prayed about it, talked it over with my family, and decided, you know what, I'm going to make the jump. And so after 5 years of being in private practice and having just made partner, it was a real tough decision at the time, but a decision that I've never looked back on, and I've been grateful that I've done it. In fact, the worst day as a prosecutor was better than the best day as a defense lawyer from my perspective. And it's been a great honor to serve the public and the community. And Muskegon is now my home. Born and raised in Holland. I went to school in Holland, but Muskegon is my home. And it's where I met my wife. That's where we have our four kids. That's where we've raised our family here. And Muskegon is very special to me as a result. And I'm grateful for what this community has done for me and my family. So to be able to commit 28 and a half years in that role has been a great blessing.
Wow. We got an online comment. Sean Roberts said, I absolutely love Tim. After years of being harassed and stalked by someone mentally ill, he looked over my paperwork and told me it's fine to keep requesting PPO violations, but start also filing police reports so that it comes from his desk. From that day forward, I followed what he told me, and that person worked themselves right into a felony aggravated stalking charge and was found guilty. I am forever grateful for that advice. My life has been peaceful since. Enjoy retirement, Tim.
Well, that's very kind. I want to say that really, from my perspective, that is something that DJ and myself both tried to really develop as a culture, that anybody could reach out to us at any time. And anybody who knows DJ knows that there's an open door to speak to him all the time. And whenever there's a concern, we try to instill in our prosecutors that our first job is to listen and make sure that that people have the ability to speak with us. And so we have found that that's how the best results occur, is when we start from a listening posture. And so I really appreciate that comment. It's very kind.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, quite honestly, it's a valuable lesson that Tim taught me, because he's not just saying it. He actually practiced in the time frame that he was my chief assistant, that on a routine basis. There wasn't a person, whether they were there to complain or, you know, maybe they were struggling a little bit from a mental health capacity, Tim always took the time to have that conversation and listen. And that was a growth opportunity for my own development and career. And I obviously to this day continue to carry that forward, because again, a lot of times what we discovered was sometimes people just need somebody that's willing to just sit and listen. I think we heard that comment, that thank you, more than once. Thank you. You're the only people that have listened to me.
Right.
Was said routinely.
Wow. 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 Good. Good. All right, DJ.
So let's talk. I mean, let's talk a little bit about, I'm going to break this next segment down here just a little bit, but I really want you to talk some of the highlights of your career, because even prior to you becoming my chief assistant, you were establishing yourself as the family court prosecutor, the person that state agencies came to, judges respected. And that was, I mean, I think people don't understand, if you're not familiar with the court system down there, that arm, if you will, the prosecutor's office, is a specialty, and it's extremely important. So talk a little bit about your time in family court.
Yeah. So when I first came to Muskegon County, my first request was that I be able to join our family court division, because when I was in Allegan, I had represented children in neglect and abuse cases and delinquency cases. And my heart was to really serve the youth of our community. And I thought, what better place to do that than a prosecutor's office, in terms of making sure that kids are being well protected, and that those kids that do get in trouble are not ultimately harmed by the system and are allowed to be productive. And so when I came to Muskegon, I says, can I join your family court division? And at the time, our bosses says, well, we've got that division full, and we frankly would like to see you prove yourself before you have a chance to go to family court. So I actually started in our district court division, and it was wonderful. I absolutely learned so much. I had so much opportunities to really develop as a lawyer. And then soon after, there came an opportunity to start doing felony work. And I remember at the time asking again, well, can I maybe go to family court? And they said, well, you certainly have earned it, but we have a need right now to have somebody in our felony division. But if you're willing to do that for us, we will let you go to family court if you want to. And so I was assigned to the felony division. And again, the amount of experience that I got and the mentoring that I got, I think really made me a much better lawyer. So that when I finally had an opportunity, I remember at the time them saying, do you really still want to go? I mean, now that you've been in our felony division and you're becoming a senior prosecutor, do you really want to go back to family court? And I'm like, absolutely. And that's where I really developed what I describe as my passion for kids. And so eventually I was able to do the neglect and abuse cases where we represent ultimately the Department of Health and Human Services, but it's designed to protect those kids that are in harm's way. And the other half of it is, like I said, the kids that start to get into trouble, how can we prevent them from essentially growing up and committing crimes as an adult? How can we keep them out of the criminal justice system? So when DJ decided to run for office about 15 years ago, we started having discussions about what might that look like. And I remember having conversations with DJ saying, and we had talked about the idea of, would you be interested in joining the administration? And I says, if you're interested in having a platform and an office that's committed to the kids, I absolutely am. And he's like, Tim, absolutely. That's exactly what I want to do. He says, one of the things that I really would like to focus my new administration in on is our kids. And I says, count me in. And so right from the get-go, 14 years ago, we started with this question of how can we really impact our youth? Because, you know, typically a prosecutor's office is very reactive, right? Mm-hmm. There's a crime that's committed and we don't get involved until after the crime is committed. And DJ kind of put that on its head and says, yes, of course, there's always going to be a part where we have to be reactive. But what if we're proactive? What if we got involved before there was a crime committed? What if we got involved with kids before they got in trouble? What if we were able to figure out a way to essentially not do things the way that they're always done in every other county and every other state? What if we actually worked with the schools? What if we worked with the churches? What if we worked with the community and found ways to keep kids out of the system, to keep them from committing crimes, and ultimately with the idea that they wouldn't then grow up to commit crimes when they were adults? Mm. And I'm like, I am sold. I'm 100% in. And so when DJ was elected, that became the centerpiece. And I remember we started, and we started with this idea that we can't do this alone. We don't want to do this alone. So we need to develop our partnerships, and it starts with the community. So who are we going to develop those relationships with? Obviously law enforcement was a key partner. And so we invited, DJ's predecessor actually started this organization, but it hadn't really gotten off on the ground until after DJ got elected. And started what was called the Social Justice Commission. And the Social Justice Commission was really an opportunity for people in our community to come together. And it started with our churches, and it started with our schools, and then it included law enforcement. And the first thing that we wanted to do was just simply meet together, identify the issues, and try to problem solve them together. And I don't think that there's been another attempt like that throughout the state to say, what can we do proactively? And so we started off with this idea of what if we kept our kids in school and found ways to keep them invested, to give them a future, and not in a punitive way. And so we started off, I think our very first venture was the Safe Days, Quiet mm-hmm. Nights idea. This idea that we wanted to keep kids in school, off the streets, out of trouble, and keep them in their homes at night. And so we did the Safe Days, Quiet Nights program that focused in on keeping kids in school, making sure that they graduated and had a career and a successful options after that, and that they weren't out after midnight when sometimes bad things can happen. And that was really the start. But that really was just the beginning of what I'd like to call a very proactive approach to crime. How can we reduce crime before it happens? And that kind of gave way. And then Social Justice Commission started to grow. And in terms of some of the participants, everybody was welcome at the table. But we have Mount Zion Church of God in Christ there, Living Word, the NAACP, Lakehawks, Department of Civil Rights, the YMCA, Health West, Muskegon Heights Police Department, Baker College, and the list goes on. There's literally 25 different organizations from Muskegon that come together and really talk about what's happening in our community and what can we do. In fact, I know the Beat is involved in this too. And one of the things that we had done several years ago was the last day of school activities.
Yes.
Where we as a group had decided, wouldn't it be great if we could celebrate the kids having a safe summer by having a safe party at both Muskegon Heights and Muskegon High School? And I know the Beat's there with as a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was really an idea that came from Social Justice Commission.
Okay. Wow.
And some of the other things that we had talked about was like the Buddy Bucks program. Mm-hmm. Which I think is still going strong in the city of Muskegon, where officers make contact with kids throughout the community and get them free coupons for essentially rewarding them for good behavior.
Yeah.
So that the interaction between police officers and our kids is a positive thing and wasn't always considered negative.
Dr. Kai Guy said, yes, it was great. Pastor Guy.
Yes.
Speaking of social justice.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then we also involved the churches and stuff. But you know, from my perspective, I wasn't aware of any other prosecutor's office in the state that had decided to meet so intentionally with our community partners, expand that group, and talk about what can we do to stop crime before it happens. And it was really an experiment, really. I mean, we thought it would make sense. We thought it would help. But I think we started this process by saying, listen, we don't want to do things that just make us feel good, right? We want to do things that actually improve the quality of life and reduce crime. I remember one of the questions originally was, well, why does a prosecutor care so much about whether kids go to school? I mean, we got more important things to handle, was the argument, that we got more violent crime to deal with. And we certainly had enough of those cases back then. But our view of that was, listen, if we can keep kids in school, we can reduce violent crime.
Exactly.
And that if we're a partner with our schools and with our parents and with our community to essentially overcome those obstacles and keep our kids in school, we will reduce violent crime. And I'm not aware of another program throughout the state where that kind of comprehensive view was taken. But it was an experiment, and it was an experiment that I think hadn't really been tried before, and we didn't necessarily know how it would how it would work.
DJ, what do you know so far?
I think, you know, we intentionally look at our crime stats every year. I mean, the official stats come out of the state police usually around April for the previous year, and we were very intentional about looking at a couple of different things, looking at the overall number of complaints taken by law enforcement throughout the county, and then breaking it down by certain categories. And what we were starting to see was a continuous downward trend every year of the overall criminal complaints. But more importantly, we were seeing a downward trend in what we would call our part one crimes, like our homicides, our violent crime. I will never, ever take full credit for that, because that's not how it works. I mean, we certainly were partners with a lot of different organizations and a lot of different people, including our law enforcement partners, to be a part of the overall solution. I think that wide of an effort, both community and law enforcement effort, is the reason why we're seeing the numbers the way that we do. I mean, it truly is, to what Tim was saying, it was looking at it from a different set of lens, because, you know, it's very easy to just be a prosecutor and react every time. Hey, listen, crime happens, police investigate, we decide whether or not we're going to charge. And that we could do that all day long if we wanted to. But if that doesn't solve or at least work towards the solution of ultimately reducing or, you know, in a great world, ending crime altogether, then I think we haven't really lived up to our public service mantra, if you will, as public servants. And so I was very, very, and still am today, very passionate about this proactive view of things and how we can use the prosecutor's office in a way to either leverage partnerships or, you know, at least get people to answer the phone and emails. I mean, I mean, people still don't answer all my emails all the time. But you know, certainly I wanted to leverage the office in a way that at least got people knowing that we were interested in sitting at the table. We are interested in being a part of that conversation. We're certainly interested in being a part of the groundswell or the brainstorm on how we solve these issues.
Yeah. And just if I can just share a little data that we haven't shared publicly before. So this is the first time it's coming out. You know, as we were looking at like our truancy, and if I can just kind of explain to you how that works, is unlike the traditional situation where the police get involved and ultimately there's a report sent to our office and we decide to file charges. When we became aware and started partnering up with the school that there was a problem with a kid not going to school, what we did instead was we actually invited that family to come and meet with us personally. DJ has met personally with the parents and the kids that were, for whatever reason, having difficulties with school. And then we would enter a contract with them and say, listen, we don't want to file charges. We don't want to file charges against you as a student. And for the younger ones, we didn't want to file charges against the adults if we didn't have to. So we would enter into a diversion contract, which would say, we're going to keep you out of the criminal justice system, but we really want to help you problem solve so that this doesn't continue on. We did the same thing for curfew. Yep. When we did our curfew sweeps, I think the initial reaction was, boy, you know, how hard are you going to be on these kids? And what we ended up doing is we actually had prosecutors spend the night at the police stations. DJ's done it. I've done it. Yeah. A number of our prosecutors does. We would be there at midnight and the officers would go make contact. And instead of filing charges, we would bring the parents down to come and pick up their kids. And they'd have a conversation with us about, listen, we don't want to file charges against you or the kids, but we also want to address this behavior. And we never caught the same kid twice.
Yep.
Really?
So it was
so effective. And the word got out and most of the parents were very appreciative. Most of the parents, I think, were very responsible and took it seriously. And we never caught the same kid twice. And again, this is not typical prosecution, right? This is saying we don't want to prosecute. Give us an option not to prosecute, and we're going to plug you into good, positive things.
So you guys, this will happen on the weekends, right?
Weeknights.
Weekends.
Yeah. You down at the police
station. Yeah, we're down at the police station.
At midnight.
Hanging out with the neighborhood officers. And I mean, I think, you know, what's really great is one of the benefits is, again, you know, I think a lot of times people think that in some respects we are partners with law enforcement because they're sort of our investigators when things go wrong. But in the same token, it's our responsibility as prosecutors to hold the officers accountable for their actions. I mean, they're not above the law. And that's the strange dynamic where, you know, we're partners one day and then the next day we might be looking at you because you made a bad choice or a bad decision. But ultimately, I think law enforcement in general always appreciated and still today appreciates when either myself or one of my assistants is out there in the wee hours of the morning or when crime happens, because, you know, we can offer that arm of legal, not necessarily legal advice, but legal assistance, especially when it comes to searches and seizures. And, you know, maybe there's a question as to whether or not they want to collect a piece of evidence, and we can rely on our experience in the courtroom and say, yeah, you're going to want to do that, because the last time I had a case like this, you know, we got burnt by this, by not doing something or doing something. And so, you know, ultimately, it really is a valuable partnership that I learned early on in my career, even before I was elected. That was part of sort of what was expected. And I appreciated, you know, the days where I didn't sleep for 2 days because we were running around the city looking for suspects and witnesses. You know, it made for interesting war stories later. But yeah, I mean, I really think, and I know we've talked about this many times, but the citizens of Muskegon County, and I hope this is true, should really appreciate the law enforcement community that's here. I mean, I know listen, I know that there's going to be complaints and people are going to be upset because they, you know, either they didn't do something or they didn't do enough. I totally appreciate and understand that. But overall, these men and women that go out and risk their lives every day do care about the communities that they serve and do care about the cases that they investigate. And quite frankly, I see that every single day. And I'm happy to call people out when I don't think they're, you know, necessarily, or they could have done something better, because I think we all deserve everybody's best effort. And again, I think we have a law enforcement community here in Muskegon County that we should all be very proud of.
Dr. Guy said, don't forget the caution team.
Yeah.
Oh, the caution team was also came out of the Social Justice Commission. That's exactly right. And these are ideas that aren't coming from us. These are ideas that we are that collectively are coming together. I want to tell you some other things that came as a result of social justice, and it still meets every month. When we saw the success in both the truancy cases and in the curfew cases, DJ had the idea of what if we extended that to our adults too? And how can we do that? How can we keep our adults out of the criminal justice system, especially the first-time offenders? And so DJ launched the first ever in Muskegon County that I'm aware of, diversion program, where we had first-time nonviolent offenders who hadn't been in trouble before but had committed some offense. And instead of filing charges against them, we brought them down to the office. We reviewed with them the police report and the evidence we had. And for those that were interested, we had agreed to sign a contract where they would have to do some community service. They would have to show us that they were going to make better decisions. Sometimes they were involved in programmings at Restorative Justice Center. They would have to show us employment. They'd have to show us schooling. We essentially would tailor a contract that says, listen, you made a mistake here. Now, we have two choices. One choice is to file charges against you, have you arrested and brought to court. The other one is for us to enter into this agreement where we won't prosecute you. And that diversion program, at one point, I think we had a high of over 200 cases per year, where we were able to essentially, I think from a community protection standpoint, do what was good for the community, but also do what was good for the person and avoid a criminal history, avoid all of the court costs and fines and probation and all, even jail in some cases. And the success that we saw there was, again, just really encouraging. So it again, I think, propelled us into saying, what more can we do? So we did the curfew enforcement. We did the truancy enforcement. Now we've done this adult diversion program. And then that was really about the same time that we became a big proponent of the specialty courts. Yep. And DJ got very much involved in the Veterans Treatment Court, which, again, was designed to essentially deal with criminal activity that had been committed by veterans in a more effective way. And so that, again, kind of took us out of the normal kind of prosecution role and said, what can we do to actually make an impact that will benefit our community and the people that are there? So it started with the Veterans Treatment Program. Mm-hmm. It's gone to a substance abuse treatment program, a mental health treatment court, those, again, were all ideas that were outside of the normal kind of prosecution. The Major Crime Task Force also came out of the Social Justice Commission, this idea that if we could use our law enforcement resources together to solve violent, serious crime, that would help our community. The DV Task Force is another one. And the one that I'm really, the most recent one is the Safe Senior Task Force. These are all ideas that are outside the normal kind of prosecution work. It takes a tremendous amount of time and effort on the part of our staff, but we are absolutely convinced that they make a difference. And unless I've missed something, I'm going to share with you the data that I collected this weekend that we're revealing on the beat for the first time publicly.
All right. John Rowe.
So have I missed anything big in terms of some of the stuff that we've been doing since 2012?
No, I think, you know, certainly the latest additions being the Safe Senior and the DV Task Force. I mean, being able to find grant funds and use some senior millage money to create these specialty teams that deal specifically in those areas is crucial, because what we learned prior to that was, in particular in the Safe Senior cases, the financial exploitation cases, as a prime example, they're very time and labor intensive, right, both from a law enforcement perspective and from a prosecution perspective. And so being able to have dedicated resources to that means that those elderly folks, those senior citizens who are being taken advantage of, will get the special attention they deserve. And it, with hopes of either A, holding the offenders accountable for stealing their money, and then B, getting that money back to them, restoring their nest egg, essentially, that had been taken from them.
Yeah, so to reveal some of the data, like I said, we really give credit to the Social Justice Commission partners, right? We don't take any credit for ourselves. We recognize that this was a community problem with community partners and community solutions. And that's what it's been since 2012. And we are so grateful, especially for the leadership from our church leaders, as well as our school leaders. They have been instrumental, but the number of organizations that have come alongside of us to say, hey, listen, we want to help, I think is ultimately why we've been so successful. And this is what the data shows. So over the weekend, I went through the Michigan State crime report, which again, we can talk a little bit about, is this the most accurate data? I think it is. Certainly there are some it needs to be understood that not all crime is reported, but this is all reported crime, whether it's solved or not, whether it's a false allegation or not, but it is at least over the years, the most consistent data that we look at. And as a prosecutor, this is how we measure crime, right? How many criminal offenses are occurring? So let's start with this. I went from 2010 to 2025, and 2025 is the last year of data that we have. We have seen a 41% decrease in all crimes in Muskegon County, wow, from 2010 to 2025. And is this video too?
Yeah, this video.
You know, I always told DJ to face for radio. Yeah. So. Yeah. He promised me there'd be no video. But
well, listen,
it's right up on YouTube, Tim.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, if there's a way for me to show this grid here for a second, mm-hmm, I actually put this. Can you see it or not?
Yeah, but no, it's. Let me zoom in for a second here.
Okay.
One second here. Give me a second.
Because essentially, this is showing the data going back from 2008 until 2025. But what I really want to illustrate is how you see a consistent trend downwards. This is not just a situation where we're seeing a blip in the data. We are seeing that as these proactive programs are essentially being put in place, we're seeing a trend downward in overall crime. But as DJ mentioned, we look at this in terms of the most serious crimes and the least serious crimes too. And this is what the data shows for
that.
This
is from Muskegon County.
Muskegon County. And we're very global when it looks to that. We look to the entire county, and it includes every part of the county. But for the less serious crimes, okay, and these are typically you would see things property like shoplifting, crimes, yeah, most of the minor property crimes, we've seen a 36% decrease in these crimes in Muskegon County from 2010 to 2025. Again, 15 years, we've seen a 36% decrease. But in the most serious crimes, the ones that the FBI tracks, we've seen a 57% wow, decrease,
wow,
in Muskegon County from 2010 to 2025. Now, I think that this is a testimony to the fact that these proactive programs, if we as a community are committed to being proactive and not just reactive, we can see numbers that frankly defy conventional wisdom. And when I look at it at the overall Michigan data, because that's what we do, we compare. Mm-hmm. Well, are we seeing the same kinds of data? And I will say that I was pleased to find out, because it certainly has gone up and down in Michigan over the last 15 years. But currently, and I took just a snapshot, I didn't do a trend because it was too much data, but I decided to look at the crime in 2010 and 2025. Where are we? We saw a 7.8% decrease in the most violent crimes. Now, that's good.
Right.
In Michigan.
Right.
But we're at 57% decrease.
So we're beating the rest of the state.
We're beating the entire rest, yeah, of the state, wow, which interestingly also includes Muskegon County. So they get the benefit of our reduced crime too.
Right.
So again, this is why I am so proud to be a prosecutor in Muskegon County, why I'm so proud to be part of DJ's team and part of the community effort here, because over the last 28 years, and especially the last 14, our entire mission has been to work with other community partners so that we can make an impact like these numbers show. Now, that means we got to get out of our office, right? That means that DJ's sometimes at the police department at 1 o'clock in the morning,
right.
Or that we're at the schools. It also means that we are at various community events, whether it's the last day of school activities where we had our prosecutors actually in a dunk tank where the kids had a chance to throw them in the water if they had a good enough arm. It meant DJ and I going to the churches. You know, we have over 30 churches that have committed to pray for peace in Muskegon County. And so DJ and I over the years have made it a priority to actually go and worship with them. And we, it's been such a wonderful thing to be at Pastor Greer's church at Queen Esther and Mount Zion Church of God in Christ with Pastor
Bennett
and Pastor Burrell and Pastor Guy. Yep. And I know I'm going to miss some, but that has been just as important so that we're not just downtown, but we're actually in the community. And there is nobody who is involved in more than DJ Hilson.
Yeah, he's out here, man.
He is everywhere all the time. But whether it's the summer night out, the crime prevention program, whether it's Boys and Girls Club, whether it's the Child Abuse Council, whether it's Rotary, DJ's there. And so it's easy to want to belong to a team where community engagement is such a high priority. I don't mind telling you, if DJ had not won that election or if he had decided not to run, I was leaving.
Wow.
There is no way I was sticking
because
around.
Of his commitment.
Because of his commitment. And the thing about it is, you know, certainly DJ has demonstrated that he's a skillful trial lawyer. He's demonstrated he's a nice guy to be around. Mm-hmm. But his commitment to the community, I think, is unmatched.
Right.
And I really needed to work for somebody that was totally sold out for the community. So the last 14 years has been such a tremendous honor. I have been so grateful to get to know our leaders in our community and to work with them. It's been a wonderful career, and it's hard to walk away, frankly.
Wow.
After 28 and a half years, I have seen so much progress that it's hard to walk away. But I will say, we've got a team assembled right now that I think is the best we've ever had. And I really feel like I'm leaving the office in very capable hands, and knowing that DJ hasn't left obviously helps. But it made it a little easier to step away, to know that everything that we've been working for would continue.
41%. That's pretty significant.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and again, it's, you know, maybe we should be more intentional about, you know, showing these numbers because, you know, I always get frustrated, and it's been relatively recent too, where I'll have the Grand Rapids media folk ask me the question, well, what do you tell people who are afraid to come to Muskegon? And I am very diplomatic with my answer, because what I want to say is you guys report the news. You know what's going on in Grand Rapids. You know what's going on in Kalamazoo. And I don't know that you can necessarily say that it's at the same level here in Muskegon. So that's a silly, to me, that's a silly question to ask. But I always say is, do your own research. See it.
Mm-hmm.
Understand that what we're seeing is something completely different than what you're perceiving. And so reality is certainly far better than perception. And I think what I believe is what we're seeing a change is in local people's own attitudes and perceptions, that it's no longer, gosh, I can't, you know, I hate living here, but I can't, you know, I can't afford to move anywhere else. We got something really good going on right now.
Right.
I mean, the trends here in a lot of different areas for Muskegon County are all going up. And to me, this is an exciting time. It's really an exciting time because we are physically seeing the growth and development in all facets. Okay. And I'm convinced that within the next 5 years, for sure in the next 10, that Muskegon is going to be a destination, that people aren't going to say, well, I'm going to stop in Muskegon, but I'm going to stay in Grand Rapids. It's going to be, I'm going to stop in Grand Rapids, but I'm going to stay in Muskegon. And the same for our friends down south of us, in Ottawa County. I really believe that we are we're hitting it at the right time, and we're moving in the right direction, where everybody else is sort of stagnant. They're happy with what they've got going on, and they're plateauing, and that's okay with them.
Right.
I don't think that's the same for the people that are making the big decisions here in this county.
Wow, this is impressive. You got a question for him. We got two of the top prosecutors. Well, he's going to retire now, but he got the experience. DJ, we got DJ Hilson here live in the studio with Tim Mott. Tim Mott got a lot of respect in the community. 231-722-8338. We got like 13 more minutes. We have a question for Tim Mott. This is a question. This is not on that list there for either one of y'all. How do we stop drugs getting into America?
Oh man,
we've been doing this for too long. Like, is there going to be an end game for this? Like, they shoot boats and you're still getting.
You go back to way back to whether it's Bush or Reagan, and this concept, this term, that war on drugs, right? That we've got this war on drugs,
right?
And that war's been going on forever. And I would like to believe that at some point in time, maybe we can start squeezing the pipeline. But, you know, the difficulty is that certainly the cartels have a boatload of money. Mm-hmm. As much as, you know, maybe people don't want to admit it, they have a boatload of influence, mm-hmm. financially and otherwise. Mm-hmm. And as long as they can continue to dig tunnels along a border or, you know, smuggle it in, you know, that it's going to be a war on drugs for a while. And really, one of the things for me, one of the pipe dreams for me has always been this idea that, well, you know, maybe we can't stop the supply, or we can't totally squeeze out the supply. But what if we were able to slow or stop the demand?
Right.
Right. Right. So the real trick here is if we stop demand, then at a minimum, the drugs have to go somewhere else, because, you know, the Muskegon County is not profitable anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's why I've been heavily in support of invested in treatment courts. I've been heavily invested and supported in support of the outside agencies that work on treating the sickness that people have, that, you know, drives them to cope with whatever they're coping with by using an illegal substance. And that's a tough mountain to climb.
Right.
But, you know, again, I think as we make progress and we start walking up that mountain, the better chance of us shutting down the drug issue, at least in Muskegon, is to cut off the demand.
Do you think the drugs that land here in Muskegon come from out of the country?
Oh, I suppose there's got to be, if you are able to trace, you know, if you're able to back trace, mm-hmm. I got to believe that the origin is in some foreign country.
Where the government is behind it.
Yeah, well whether the government, the cartels are influencing government officials, or, you know, the government is so overwhelmed that they can only, you know, do so much, and that leaves loopholes open for this stuff to get in. But yeah, I mean, I'd be interesting, and I'd probably have to talk to our federal friends on this one. If you were to backtrack, I bet you most of our stuff is coming from out of country.
But isn't it, should it be, I mean, for you guys to be prosecutors, and I was a correction officer from the 80s and from the 80s to early 2000, that we got this war on this drugs, and is actually losing it.
Well,
it's billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars spent on a war on drugs, and we lost.
Well, I'm not going to throw in the towel just yet. I'm not going to say we lost.
We lose.
But listen, I'll say this. I will say this. The answer, because there are individuals out there that say, well, the answer is just legalize it.
And I thought about that too.
That'll take care of the issue. And I'm telling you, that is not the solution. That's not the solution, because legalizing it doesn't get rid of the black market. Mm-hmm. The black market will always exist, because there'll be individuals out there who say, well, wait a second. You're telling me that I got to pay the state of Michigan a boatload of money just to be licensed. Yeah,
that part.
Right. Yeah. In order to open up a business. And then I got to do that. I got to pay that. And then I'm paying these taxes on top of that. So I pay a license fee every year, and I pay all these taxes every year. Yet Jimmy Joe over here has got 50 plants growing, and he's making $500 a pop without having to do any of that.
Right.
It is. I'm telling you right now, it's amazing that the responsible business owners are the ones reporting to state police about the illegal growths. They are our biggest tip.
Taxes.
Yeah, they are our biggest tip right now, because they're like, this is crap. I'm doing it the right way, and they're doing it the wrong way. And so, again, legalizing will not get rid of the black market. It never will. And, mm-hmm. and if people believe that, you're fooling yourselves. Mm-hmm. The other issue is that what we have seen is an uptick in marijuana related crashes.
Mm-hmm.
So wow. it's now, it used to be really uncommon that in a crash we'd find active THC in somebody's system. Mm-hmm. Now it's almost always expected.
You think it's different, or are they just smoking more of it?
They're just it's so commonplace. I mean, people want to equate it to like, well, it's just like drinking alcohol. And certainly it's you're exposed to it just like you were if you were going to a convenience store. But the difficulty is that when you mix the substances or you're mixing it with something else, it becomes even deadlier. And so again, we're the level of crashes that are happening I think have increased as a result of this. And you know, I was against it when it was up for a vote. I thought this was a bad idea. Not saying that we wanted to increase the penalties and make it more punitive, but in the same token, legalization has not been the answer to the problems that we were facing even before that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to throw the towel in on the war on drugs. I mean, it's going to be something that, you know, prosecutors' offices and whoever, you know, eventually whoever succeeds me, they're deal with it. And whoever sees that person, they're going to be dealing with it. It's going to be a perpetual thing that we deal with until there comes a time when people just don't need it anymore. They don't want it anymore. They decide, you know what, oof, this isn't it.
Well, I will say that is one of the reasons we've seen such success in our treatment programs, in our treatment courts, right? Because I think the old way used to be that somebody that was using drugs or alcohol to the point of abusing it, we would incarcerate them, and then the problem would just reappear.
Okay.
And the treatment courts actually, I think, at least at that level where it had involved some criminal activity, we're seeing success rates like we don't see outside those treatment courts. The Veterans Treatment Court is a great example of where many times substance abuse is an issue for returning vets, and that gets them involved in some criminal activity that gets them in the system. And the vet treatment court is so much more effective than just locking them up.
Yeah, one of my big pipe dreams that if I had an unlimited source of funds is that I would turn the way that the system itself works and make it individualized, because, you know, unfortunately with resources and everything else, you only have certain things that you can offer to people, and it may not even be what that person is needing. Whereas when we talk about treatment courts, you're meeting the individual where they're at, and you are plugging them into what they need, as opposed to this is the only program I got, and whether you need it or not, I'm just going to check a box. And that's why I think our treatment courts are so successful, is because one, There's routine accountability. There's immediate sanction when you sort of fall off the wagon, but you're not being punished because we all expect that you're going to relapse at least one time.
All right, got it. Online comment. Jenna Robinson said, Prosecutor Mott enjoyed working with you on social justice, creating new initiatives. You will be missed. Prosecutor Hilson looked to continue the guns program to reduce violence.
Yep. You.
Yes. Janet. Which is another great program that came as a result of social justice. And again, that wasn't initiated by our office or law enforcement. That came together as a result of very, very proactive community members saying that we need to have a very intentional strategy to get guns off the street. And so we are very grateful for all of the efforts in that regard too.
DJ, before we go, any update on this, the raids that happened in Muskegon Heights?
Yeah, we're still, I mean, in fact, I just met with investigators before the long weekend last week, and kind of going over, you know, kind of what my thought and timeline was for them to kind of at least start getting us material so we can start reviewing it. My understanding, in fact, this is just coming to me today. My understanding is that we're going to start seeing some police reports coming here in the next, probably by the end of the week.
Okay.
I really appreciate people's patience. I can't.
Yeah, could the Lions get ready to start playing?
I can't overestimate the amount of material that is being gone through. And unfortunately, there isn't a team of 50 investigators looking at this. There's two guys. And so there's a mountain of things to go through. But we were, myself and the team that's working on this, were kind of helping them fine tune, you know, kind of what they needed to look for. So,
you're not using any AI apps.
Right? No. We're not.
Because I know y'all have that.
We're not adding seconds on the time clock. We're not doing any of that. It is eyeballs to paper. And so I'm looking forward to personally reviewing those reports when they come in, and then we'll probably by early next week, we'll be having a meeting and discussing what our next steps are. But that is still a very, very active investigation. It's still being in the MSP detective who's working this has really been thorough, really thorough. I'm really appreciative of the effort. And we're gonna do what we can. I mean,
Tim, is that why you retired?
No.
You didn't want to be part of this?
No. I'm not disappointed to have stepped away when I did, but it had nothing to do with
it. Wow. So how big is this investigation, DJ?
Well, I mean, you know, you gotta remember that you know, this was sort of an indirect result of a DEA drug investigation. And so it required us to go in and really start looking at financial records and data from City Hall, and look at how certain transactions were being conducted. And so ultimately, there's a lot to pour through.
It's a lot.
There's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot to pour through. Not saying that there's a lot of bad to pour through, but right. You know, it's like the old days where, you know, you get a file case and, you know, 50 banker's box show up. You're popping one lid at a time. You're looking through one file at a time, because again, you have to be somewhat thorough as you're going through these documents, because you don't want to miss something.
It could be something small.
It could be embedded somewhere. Not that it's being hidden, but it's just the information you needed is, it's not going to smack you in the face all the time.
Wow.
You have to be very intentional as to what you're looking for and how you're looking at it.
Wow. I'm glad I'm not a prosecutor. Good luck. Anything else before we go?
No, listen, I mean, you know, Tim mentioned this before. It goes without saying that, you know, the beat has always been I would say either the veins or the heartbeat of community. And you guys have been so central in a lot of different things, you know, from the trips to Africa that you offer these kids, which is just mind blowing, to the turkey drives. And when water was an issue, the water drives, you have always been the pulse. And that's why I really value being able to call you a friend. And I value when you call me and you ask me the tough questions, because that's what friends do. I always know that when I'm talking to you or I'm talking to Big Rob or you're calling me, that it's important and that I have to pay attention and we work through whatever we got to work through. And so I really appreciate not only the partnership, but more importantly, the friendship. You guys being a part of that inner circle means more than you know. And I value everything that you've done to help me and certainly Tim in my office succeed in being a strong community partner.
Man, we're honored. I think this is the first time we've been together consecutively for
the whole summer. I mean, listen, I just saw you as a Facebook anomaly. That's Paul Billings exists, but he only exists on social media because he's standing on some exotic beach somewhere. Letting us all know.
I took my vacation when you said you was going to take yours. So
yes.
So I wanted to be here, but I know I won't be here the next show. I don't think I'll be here for the next show.
Well, that's when I'm going to have all this breaking news, and you're going to miss it all.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm teasing you.
Wait till Halloween now.
I'm teasing.
Because I don't know how my schedule is crazy, because I know it has to happen soon, and I know my schedule for October is done. It's over. And I have to leave the country for like a week, you know, so. But I'll be watching. Maybe I'll type in through the internet.
Absolutely, and
do the show that way remotely. Tim, thank you so much.
It has been an honor. I've really enjoyed my time here. Thank you.
All right, DJ.
All right. Well, hey, great show. I'm so glad that I didn't even have to pull his arm to get him here. He actually wanted to come. So that which is great. As always, Tim has been a compadre, colleague, and as I always say, he's been a brother to me. So it is just an honor to have worked with him, and I'm so grateful that he's not moving out of Muskegon County.
Right,
that we get to see each other more than we don't get to see each other. So that's very exciting for me. But otherwise, Muskegon, be safe. Have a great great couple weeks. We'll see you in two.